talk about every accident because we're live with George Schlatter, and you are no accident. You are a gift from God, George. You are.
Are you sweet or what?
I got to tell you, I am so grateful to you for, I can't even count the hours of joy that you have given in my life, because it's not just when I was watching the stuff. It's when I think about it and I laugh all over again. And when I'm sitting in a party and we all know every line to everything you've done.
I would love for you to send me some of these. Is there a box on your screen? Are we on yet?
We're on.
Oh, okay, because there's a box on the screen for some reason. Anyway.
There's a box?
Yeah. I wish you would send me, I wish you'd send me some of your tapes, because I find you charming and captivating, and I would love to look a little further into.
Where have you been all my life, George Schlatter?
Well, see, that's it. That's the attack. The you don't have any idea what you're going to say until it's over, do you?
Boy, I got to tell you, no, I don't. I fly totally without a net. I have no script. I'm totally unprepared. I just go live and
that's
I just yak.
That's the secret. That's the secret.
I got to tell you, this Still Laughing, A Life in Comedy, I read this book. I savored every single word. And I was telling you before we went live, I'm a writer. I had a literary salon. I coach writers now. This book is a treasure. You are a masterful storyteller. Besides the stories that you have to tell, and your cast of characters cannot be beat. But this is a wonderful book. Wonderful book.
Thank you. And it was the way the book happened. People have been after me to do a book, right? And
yeah.
I get around. This is my first book, and next year I'm going to read another one. But, but they've been after me, so I did not want to sit down and write, you know, like a writer. When we did Laughing, we sat down and we would write, and then we would improvise and we would change and whatever. But that's what the book was. The book was a stream of consciousness, just talking. And my assistant Martha Bose, who used to be a tap dancer, but anyhow, she sat down and typed all of these notes. And then we give it to John Max, who's probably the top comedy writer now. And I said, John, take this, do just what I've done, take out all of the stories that Jolene will not be happy about reading again, you know? My early life involved some shady people and adventures, so none of that's in the book. So I appear to be a very, you know, good citizen. But anyhow,
although Richard, you're walking in on Richard Pryor is a pretty interesting story.
Oh yeah. And well, let's see, accident. We must learn to savor our accidents, you know. And we try to avoid accident. No, savor them, enjoy them, and that's what the book is about a series of accidents.
Well, your accidents sure led to a whole lot of magic. That's for sure. How on earth does one of the funniest men come from Alabama? How does this happen?
I wasn't in Alabama very long, so
I'm guessing not.
I recovered. I moved from Alabama to East Aurora, and then I wound up in St. Louis, and that was an adventure. My whole life was a series of adventures and misadventures, but a lot of it happened in St. Louis. And my mother was a concert violinist, and she had an outrageous sense of humor. And we learned to laugh. We didn't have a lot of money. If you don't have a lot of money, you laugh. Laughter is the best therapy in the world, you know?
I believe that that's true. But that's not always the case. There are some people who don't have a lot of money who are very bitter and very sad, I think.
Well, that's too bad. But when they lose the money, they'll get their sense of humor back. I mean, in therapy, they have the ultimate pain. When everything, the ultimate pain causes you to laugh. It's the only thing you can do. And when you, if you can laugh,
I
you
like
can
that.
Do anything. Anyways.
Is there anything that you didn't laugh through? I mean, have there been, everything I read in the book was just one series of wonderful adventures after another.
Well,
was there ever a time when it wasn't funny, when life wasn't funny for you?
Well, no, you see, you make it funny. There's humor all around us. Humor is everywhere you look, there's something funny. And that's the panacea. That's the Novocaine of life is jokes. because nobody throws a punch when they're laughing. Nobody, you know, cries when they're laughing. And laughing is the answer. And if you can learn to laugh, you can solve anything. You know, and you're amazing. I really want to see some of your tapes.
George, where have you been? I'm going to stop saying that, but I'm so happy that you're in my life now. That's for damn sure.
I'm glad to be in it.
Okay, so let's talk about your life because it is absolutely amazing. So how did your father was a salesman, your mother's a concert violinist. How do you get into showbiz? How does that happen?
By accident, really.
I love the accident.
Seriously. My life is a series of one accident after another.
I love it.
Eventually, I wound up booking. I wound up, oh God, it would take me forever to tell you, but I wound up booking shows in Vegas and booking shows at the Frontier Hotel in Las Vegas. My life up until Las Vegas was bumpy and then questionable, and I knew a lot of shady people.
Were you a gangster?
I
didn't ask that question.
No, yes, you did. I knew some gangsters.
Okay.
And when I wanted to get married to my wife, Jolene, she said she wouldn't marry me because I'd be dead before I was 30 with the people I was hanging out with.
Okay, and wait, stop a second. How did you meet Jolene?
Jolene came to audition at Ciro's as a dancer. And I see the most beautiful girl I'd ever seen.
But what a gorgeous woman.
Not a great dancer. And so I hired somebody else. And so she came in the next day. I came to rehearsal and there was Jolene. I said, what are you doing here? She said, well, Mr. Hover, the owner of the club, hired me. And I said, well, so anyway, put her in the back of the line. And the next day I came to rehearsal, she's in the front of the line. And because she was doing something different than the rest of the girls, but you just couldn't look anywhere else. Mm. So what happened was I said, she said to me, she said, all the guys here talk to me, but nobody ever asks me out. I said, no kidding. What would happen is they would ask me about Jolene. And I'd say, yeah, she's a great girl, but be careful because she's going with a really ugly guy and you don't want to get hurt. So talk to her, but be really careful, you know. So she said, everybody talks to me, but none of these guys ever ask me out. I said, I'll ask you out. So that started the whole thing. So then she said she wouldn't marry me because of the people I was hanging out with, which is true. I knew a lot of shady people, you know, from saloons in Vegas and whatever. And I said, well, I don't have to be hanging out with them anymore. She said, you'll never lose those people. And it took me a year and a half to unload a lot of my unsavory friends, but now I'm clean. Once in a while, still, you go to Vegas and say, Guido said to tell you hello. I know, oh God, go away.
But that was also the days when Vegas was, that was the whole Godfather Vegas days, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
Everything in Vegas happened, but not to one person. It happened all across the whole spectrum of personalities in Vegas. Vegas was a trip. It was an adventure. It was in the old days, but it was not the kind of gangster that you read about or see in movies. You know, it was all kind of quiet. Yeah.
And so how did you segue from booking Vegas to television?
I was booking the shows at the Frontier Hotel, and then began to. What happened was, NBC had a show on Saturday night. I had a show, and they had opposite Lucille Ball and Gunsmoke. They had a show, and they said they would not get any rating at all. And I said, well, I'll do a show. And so, what is it? I said, just a show of accident. All these new people, none of them had agents, none of them had known. None of them were sitcom people. They were not actors and actresses. They were young character people. You would have been perfect, you know? And so we rounded up all of these young character people and they came in and we just started taping. And a lot of it was improvised. A lot of it was accident. And we would have a script, but if anything happened other than that, we'd keep it. And it was like just all these disjointed bits and pieces. A lovely man at Timex said he wouldn't buy the show. He said, I like the show, but it doesn't make sense. He had to have a host. So I said, but the show that I envisioned didn't have a host. He said, well, for him to do it, it had to be more normal. It had to have a host. So that's when I got Rowan and Martin. They were doing the nightclub act. Dan was very straight and Dick was kind of dumb, you know. And so they were perfect because they'd open the show, close the show, and then in the middle do a couple of introductions. And then the rest of the madness happened around them, which worked.
And how was it stressful, George, because they didn't like each other? Did that create
well, they didn't really, they weren't crazy about each other, no, but they were doing a saloon act. They were actually going to break up because it was going no place, but they were perfect for laughing because the madness happened around them. And they would not, from the time they left the stage till they came back on stage for the next show, they never even spoke to each other. They just,
wow.
So it worked because that kind of friction and that kind of non-relationship was perfect for this. So they came in and it was a trip. And we would come in and have, we had a script. The script was thick. And we would start the tape. And anything that happened that was an accident, we'd keep it. And we'd probably tape an hour and a half and then cut that down to 30 minutes and then put that on the air. And the network looked and they said, George, this isn't a show. And I said, yeah. They said, I said, you laughed. And I said, and the audience is brighter than you are. And they said, but it doesn't make sense. You said, I went to them and said, this thing is when you say, don't go away, we'll be right back. And then you dip to black and come right back. And I said, yes. And they said, but you can't do that. You're telling the audience to go away. I said, no, I'm telling the audience to come back. So anyway, all that kind of argument would happen all the time. And the network kept saying, we can't air this. This is not. And, but they had nothing else to put on opposite and Lucy and Gunsmoke. So by the time the third show, the audience started saying, well, there's something happening here, right? And the audience came and it built and built. And by the time you got a big audience, you know, I mean, I'm difficult now, but you can imagine me with a 50 share, forget about it. It was totally impossible. So I would say things like, if you don't like it, cancel it. But no, Joe, no, we don't want to cancel it. We want to fix it. I said, fixing it would cancel it. So that's the way it kind of kept up. And it stayed on for like 6 or 7 years.
It was the, as I said to you, every Monday night, there was no place anyone was going to be but in front of that TV. You and bet your bippy.
Every Monday night, we almost didn't make it because we were editing up until we went on the air.
Did you have trouble with censors? You must have had trouble with censors.
I have my own censors. They would come. They had three censors that just lived with me. And they would come out, you can't say this, you can't say that. And when they would say, I couldn't say one thing, I was saying something else we couldn't say. But it was at a different time, and they'd never seen anything like that. So they didn't know what to expect. See, we've got to cherish accidents, you know? That's what I sense with you. I sense there's an accident just ready to happen inside there. And accidents what makes this interesting, you know?
You know, you keep saying that, and you made such brilliant accidents. Okay, can you tell us how you found each of these people? I mean, Artie Johnson,
Goldie Hawn was a dancer. Goldie Hawn was a dancer on the Andy Griffith Show. And my woman working with me, Carolyn Raskin, would develop many of the editing techniques that we now enjoy. But Carolyn came up, she's got to see this girl. So I go down and I said, I'm not using dancers. So I go down and I saw this adorable girl. So I bring her up to the audience and she sat in a chair just, hi, you know. And I said, what do you want? I'm not a comedian. I said, you're fine. So we brought her in, we gave her introduction to do. And she screwed up this introduction so bad. And it was, so she said, oh, I'm sorry, I'll do it again. I said, no, Goldie, that'll be just fine. And from there on, nobody ever let her rehearse. Nobody showed her a script. Nobody let her do anything. And it was just, we focused on accidents. We must cherish the accidents in our life.
And I love that you keep saying that.
Well, when you look,
are you fearless, George? You strike me as somebody who, you strike me as fearless. Are you fearless?
Fear to me is funny. I mean, I mean, I remember these meetings I would have, you know, and I would go in and say, we're going to cancel the show. I said, I would if I were you. I can't. But see, this was 50 years ago, you know, long 60 years ago. And I had nothing to lose. And I was doing variety shows.
Did you do variety shows? We're going to talk about some of those. But let's stay in laughing first.
Accident thing. I mean, when you get Ruth Buzzy coming in as Gladys, right?
And then how'd you find Ruth Buzzy? What was she doing at the time?
Came into the office and sat down at a little piano in the back room and played a song she'd written called Don't Futz Around. And it was the worst song I ever heard. And then she came in with that hairnet on. I said, I just absolutely loved it. Artie Johnson was selling clothes at Carol's. And he came in and wore the German helmet and was on my front yard. And I said, this is wonderful. And he had all of these characters. And well, and Lily came into the office and just started doing these characters. And she said, I want you to do the show. She was going to go back to New York because it wasn't working for her because there was no place for Lily Tomlin characters.
Wow.
Laugh-In was a place that not only used them, but that required them. So we did with Lily and Rhodes Ruth and Goldie and Lynn.
Okay, so I didn't remember that Lily wasn't an original character till I read your book. And you say that Lily was brought in to replace Judy. So how did you find Judy?
Just by accident. I mean, she was an outrageous little girl that didn't wear a bra and didn't wear pants and would come in and she was just an outrage. And she'd actually been mentioned. Anyhow, she'd been married. And the guy used to punch her around a little bit, and she could take a punch. She got the job because she could take a punch. Actually, she was married to going with Burt Reynolds, and
right, I remember that.
I said they'd still been married if she could have learned to take a punch. But they, she separated with Burt Reynolds, and here walked into my office, and. Did all the, you know, anything, right? And she would do pratfalls and it was all right. So we managed to, all the people who could not get a job on regular television found a home on Laugh-In.
Well, George, how did you come up with the concept? I mean, because it was completely unique. It had never been done. You created this genre. Where did it come from?
Accident.
How?
Accident. Well, if you realize, you know, when you see a guy fall down on the street, right?
Yeah.
Slips on ice and falls down. Some people go, that's terrible. That's awful. Some people say, that was really funny the way. we would celebrate the fall and look around you and you see, think back at your worst moments, right? And flash back on your worst moments and look and see, is it now funny? And you can just say, turn it a little bit and it's funny. And laughter is the biggest panacea in the world. It's a big painkiller. So,
but how did you come up with the concept of doing like the wall with?
The wall, the wall was a, was a we had a great set designer, Jay Krause. He brought in some material for a script book and it was all those little boxes. And I said, this is great, can they open up? What do you mean? I said, if those little doors could open up, and that became the joke wall. And what happened is we had the joke wall on stage, but then we had little mini joke walls. We'd go to your house so you could open this doll and wall, and it appeared that you were on stage. So it added to the atmosphere of crazy, and it added to the atmosphere of a bunch of adult children having a good time. And the joke wall was great. And the wonderful thing is nobody ever knew what was going on behind the joke wall. That was also a surprise, but... and sound effects.
Was there competition? You know, I have friends that have been on Saturday Night Live and very competitive, very cutthroat atmosphere there. What was it like Laugh-In was
an adventure. I mean, I watched Saturday Night. Lorne Michaels worked for me as a writer for a
while. I read that. I'm shocked.
Yeah. And I don't remember him writing anything. I remember him going meeting saying to Dan and Dick, you write again, but I don't, it was not a great writer. But what happened was Saturday Night Live collected these people. And then if you remember the first cast on Saturday Night Live, it was pretty good.
Lorraine's a great friend of mine.
Huh? Who?
Lorraine Newman.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, she was funny, but then they started to, when they became successful, they began to be careful. And we were never careful. And Saturday Night Live now, it's not funny. It's just not. The sketches are long.
I agree.
But they're dark, and you have this huge cast.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough to do. So anyhow, I'm not crazy about Saturday Night Live.
Where did you come up with the idea to have these black? Because it's kind of vaudevillian, right? It's kind of vaudevillian.
It was vaudevillian.
Yeah.
It was burlesque.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you incorporated improv, you incorporated so many different genres in one.
My own minimal dwindling attention span had a lot to do with that. And then Carolyn Raskin developing the editing techniques, because it was impossible to edit those things that tight then. You know, and we shot it on tape, transferred it to film so we could do those brief cuts, because it was impossible to edit videotape that way. And we edited it on film, then put that back on the tape. So it was accident. We must learn to cherish the accidents. And look at that thing and say, "Oh, no, that's funny." You're just that much off. I mean, funny. I Saturday Night Live, I watch it, and I keep. There's a huge cast, and they're talented people, but there's no accident. I mean, you just these long sketches, but we need something like that. We need accident. We need somebody having fun, and I don't see them. I like Laurie. I watch those people, and I say, "Boy, I'd love to have been at rehearsal," you know. Wouldn't you? What went on during rehearsal? That's what I miss on television today is accident. I miss the feeling of what's going to happen, you know. And with Saturday Night Live, you kind of know what's going to happen. We must cherish accidents. We must cherish.
Somebody just, Barbara just asked, was there anybody that you wanted for the cast that you didn't get for Laugh-In?
Well, a lot of people see because we didn't have any money. Because they wouldn't pay anything for it, so Laugh-In was an accident from beginning to end. But we would go out in the hall, and as people came from the Johnny Carson show down the hall, we would stop them. And I've got a shot on the wall of me talking to John Wayne. I'm not gonna do that show. We put that on there. Those great people. I'm not gonna do that show. Fine, that's fine, Mr. Wayne. And we put it. So we did a lot of our guest stars the first couple of years were people we would stop in the hall. And you go surprise somebody you're that close to comedy, you know? And
I bet they were scared. I bet a lot of the really big stars were afraid to do laugh.
well,
Did they think they were afraid of looking silly?
in the beginning, they were terrified because they didn't know what we were doing, you know, and who are these people coming up and you know in the hallway? And then once they saw what it was, then they wanted to do. We got everybody. But I mean, I remember when we went to Richard Nixon and said,
Okay, you are responsible for Watergate. It is your fault. It is
yes,
your
it
fault
is.
he became the president.
One of the writers on Laugh-In was Paul Keyes, who was very close to Richard Nixon. And I needed something to open the second season. So I said, can you get? He said, well, maybe I can get Richard Nixon. I said, get him from me, too, because I hated him. But we went out in the hall and we said, Mr. Nixon, just say, sock it to me. Yes, sock it. No, just kind of smile and say, yeah, this comedy is new to me. Sock it to me. So we took that. We took that, ran down the hall, and put it in the next show. And the day after it aired, Richard Nixon, who was the squarest, most unfun person in the world, to say "sock it to me" was on every paper, and it exploded. And
I
he said,
remember that.
they said that that helped him get elected, and I've had to live with that, you
Your fault you had to live
know.
with
But you see,
that.
what we did, we said all of those people we would get in the hall, and they then once they found out that they were in the mainstream of young comedy, then everybody wanted to do it. But you miss today, when you look at a show today, look at Saturday Night Live, look at the other, you don't see accident. You know it's going to run 3 minutes or 5 minutes. You know it's going to have a tag and whatever. And the rules are there. Rules are there to be broken. And we broke them all. So
You
anyhow.
all right, so tell everybody how you got Judy Carnes' nipple on
Oh
the
no! What happened? We were shooting in the park. We were shooting half of the cast at one end of the park doing something, and the other cast are doing the other something. And Judy was up there doing some blackouts, and they had to fill some time. So Judy was always tough to keep Judy dressed. Judy had a great body and wanted you to know it. And so Steve, they're up there, and they. We were shooting blackouts, and so they shoot. Judy took her top off, and they took a close up of her nipple. And they said, "I said, guys, whoa, what are we doing?" This is, they said, "Well," I said, "I don't think I can show a nipple on here, at least not for that long." So we kept cutting the shot down shorter and shorter. So the plan became just a little bit, right? And the censors looked at it and they said, "What is that?" I said, "I don't know what it is." And Judy would take her clothes off just for the practice, you know. So, but Judy Carnes' nipple. So we put it on the air. They didn't know what it was for 2 weeks until they figured out how they could cut it. And then they said, "It's a nipple." I said, "What? You're kidding me! How would that ever?" But it was, and Judy was always an outrageous young woman who was a surprise all of the time. I loved her. I just loved her. She was outrageous. And so was Ruth and Joanne and Goldie and Lily. It was a collection of people who fit no place else. They didn't fit any.
How did you find Henry Gibson? A flower is a beautiful thing. I
Henry
remember,
Gibson,
how did you find him?
total, very straight, boring guy who came in with these boring poems. Well, I thought, if you could put a poem and then let somebody kind of figure out what the hell are you doing? It's the question. See, the moment of you looking at a show and not understanding everything can attract you, can either throw you off or it can attract you. And Henry Gibson was one of those, The Flower by Henry Gibson, you know, and he
A
would do
flower is a beautiful thing. I remember it like it was yesterday.
so that whole cast had those little moments. And the interesting thing is, none of the cast, the pieces didn't run that long, but there were enough of them that the cast scored. And that was the secret. But then I did
And
the
so
rest.
going back to what I asked you before, was it competitive?
Well, no, it wasn't competitive because they each had enough to do. They each had more to do. And so one sketch, they're the lead. Next sketch, they're doing supporting. And next sketch, they're a prop. You know, and they were having so much fun. And we would tape till 2 o'clock in the morning.
I was
And
going to say, did they get a kick out of each other? Did they make each
oh,
other
yeah.
laugh?
Oh,
Oh,
yeah.
yeah.
Sure. Because they each had enough to do when we were taping it. And then we taped maybe 2 hours to get the hour. And we only used what worked. So, I mean, it's Laugh-In was a very unique adventure. It was in a playpen for adults, and it was one of the only thing I did because I did a whole bunch of stuff before Laugh-In, and after then they came to me and they said they wanted to do a new version of Laugh-In, and could we?
Robin Williams, yeah.
Huh?
What didn't Robin Williams do the new Laugh-In?
No, Robin did another thing. Robin, I saw Robin Williams on the street in San Francisco. He was barefoot. He had coveralls on and a straw hat, and he had a fish pole out, and he's hanging it out over the audience on the street. He was fishing for assholes. Well, I saw this young man, and he was brilliant, you know, barefoot.
Wow.
And so we brought him in. I said, "Robin, you got to take a shower, clean up, and come in. I got something for you." So what would happen is nobody had seen that show, and nobody had seen Robin Williams. So when we sent Robin out there to people, they didn't know who this guy was doing all of these weird characters, you know, and Frank, he met Frank Sinatra, and it was like Frank didn't know how to do with Robin. He said, "Well, he touched me just like he knew me." He said, "I'm so excited I could drop a log." And Frank Sinatra said, "Drop a log." And but Robin was a true genius. He was a, and we one time with Robin, I said, "Robin, I want you to go out and just have a good time. And no restrictions, no length, no just no." And he went out and he did maybe what had to be 16 or 17 minutes of brilliant improvisational comedy. And that tape is somewhere in my vault of Robin Williams just doing Robin by hand.
Wow.
It was great. And people would see Robin coming and just they were fascinated, you know, to see this he was
He
improvisational.
was so stream of consciousness with, yeah.
It was all improvised, you know, because nobody wrote for Robin. We had those people coming in, and it was always kind of an adventure. And so that was later. Well, Turn On was another adventure because they wanted to do a new comedy show. So I said, "All right." So I took, and we did a show called Turn On,
Right.
and it was Laugh-In to the extreme. And it was all improv. It was all with sound effects, no audience. It was all sound effects, and we did Turn On. And they looked at this first show, and they said the commitment was for 13 shows, and they upped the commitment to 17 shows because it was all of these. It was electronic Laugh-In, and it was, you know, squeezed so tightened down. And the network looked at it, and they loved it and increased the order from 13 to 17 shows. And a guy in Cleveland wanted to keep Peyton Place on the air. And so he said, "We can't have this show," because it was truly a revolutionary experiment in television. And so he canceled the show, and he called all of the stations all the way across the country. So stations were canceling Turn On as it came across the state, the country, to where I was, after 15 minutes, it was canceled. And they wouldn't pay me unless I agreed never to run it. And so they locked up the tapes. But 2 weeks ago, they found all of the tapes of Turn On. And so they're now releasing, so now they're releasing the first like 3 half hours of Turn On. And you look at it and you go, "Whoa, what was this?" It's progressive today. But
Who was on Turn On?
nobody ever heard of, because they only
Wow.
stayed on for three 3 half hours.
And you used all unknowns like you had with Laffin.
And they were
Wow.
great people.
They must have been heartbroken.
See, but we've got to cherish accidents, you know? I mean, when you think back, some of your funniest moments, some of your biggest successes either were accidents or fringed on
All accidents.
accidents. And accidents, accidents are to be cherished, you know, not just on
I
my.
love that, George. Okay, so talk about accidents. So one of you did so much variety. You produced so much variety, and you have cojones out the wazoo. So one of the ones that I loved was when they asked you to produce the Steve Lawrence TV show, and right. And he was going to be competing with, I don't know, Dean Martin, some like big, huge stars already. And so tell everybody what you did to get some attention to Steve Lawrence.
Well, it was impossible. Steve was a great singer.
Go and gorgeous. My dad looked and sounded like him
And
very much.
but Edie never did the show, by the way. But Steve Rima, he was a great singer.
How come Edie never came out and did the show with him?
No. She just didn't want to do the show because it, again, it was an adventure. It was Steve Lawrence and it was a variety, you know, squeeze. And if you see those shows, he was, you know, it was great fun, great fun. Anyway, Rob, I loved Steve. But then, see, we had adventures with Robin Williams and with Steve Lawrence and with Andy Griffith. I mean, all of those people who were square pegs in a round hole. And they came in, and the comedy is helped by accident, you know? And if you don't expect it, that's the reason why a pie in the face gets a laugh, because nobody expects to get hit with a pie. And that became a part of burlesque with you know, pies in the face. Why? Because you don't expect it, and because it looks ridiculous, and because there's no way to recover from it. So that was, Turn On was a big pie in the face. But I did another show called A Shape of Things, which was all women, the entire show, written, produced, directed, starring,
I
edited,
love that.
everything. And I ought to show that to you too,
I
because
love that. Okay, now wait, go back to Steve Lawrence, because you brought Lucille Ball in. Well, you tricked Lucille Ball, sort of.
what happened was I needed somebody to open the show, and so I wanted Lucy because I'd done some stuff with Lucy. And I wanted her to do the show. And she said, "Why? I'm not going to go to New York to do what? A Steve Lawrence show? Why would I do that?" I said, "Okay. All right. But what am I going to do with this elephant?" Now, again, that gets somebody attention. When you say to Lucille Ball, "What am I going to do with this elephant?" What elephant? I said, "Well, I've got an elephant for you and Steve Lawrence to just ride down Schubert Alley singing a duet and on this pink elephant."
A pink elephant, no
11
less.
o'clock Saturday night, 11, pink elephant, Schubert Alley. She said, "All right, God damn it, when do you need me?" Because I mean, the idea of to Lucy of riding a pink elephant down Schubert Alley, and we got arrested. She wouldn't let me to go to jail without the elephant. But again, having Lucille Ball on a pink elephant, Schubert Alley at 11 o'clock was just such an outrageous thing to do, and it launched the show. And see, we must cherish accidents.
I love it. And okay, so you created lots of You made lots of magic from accidents, and you love women, which I love about you.
Love
Judy
women.
Gar Judy Garland, you produced Judy Garland, which now how challenging was that for you? Was Judy difficult or was Judy not difficult?
Judy was impossible.
Judy was impossible.
Impossible. And so, but I wanted to do the Judy Garland show. So I followed her down the street in Beverly Hills, and I told her I had to do the Judy Garland show. And
Wow, cojones.
she, so I wanted a meeting. So they set up this meeting, and
And
I,
you're not famous then. This is before
no, I
Laughing.
wasn't. But I'd done Dinah Shore's show, which couldn't be further away from Judy Garland. And so I sat down and I went in and I wanted to see, I wanted to meet her. And I hadn't met her. So it was about like 9 o'clock at night. And I walk in, here's this tiny little woman sitting there. And I said, So you're Judy Garland. She says, you're George Slaughter. I said, yeah. She's, whoa, boy. For some reason, I said, I don't care what you may have heard about me. There's no truth to the rumor that I'm difficult. I don't know why I said it. She said, you're difficult. I see, even you've heard it. She says, let's go have a drink. So my first meeting with Judy Garland was maybe 5 minutes, right? Less. And we went out, and from there on, I found out if I could make her laugh, I could do anything. And that was my duty, just to break that tension, you know? And we'd do terrible things to Judy just to make her laugh. And
And you had her and Liza on together, didn't you?
yeah, we had, and they were great together, but they both didn't trust each other. They both became very competitive when they hit on stage together. It was their first appearance on together, and they when they came out on stage, they were very, very competitive.
Rick, Judy was competitive with Liza. That's so.
Oh boy, Judy would have been competitive with a regiment of Marines. I mean, tiny. She was tiny, but this energy, you know, this attack she had. And but I had great fun with Judy. But I did outrageous things with Judy, you know, Schubert Alley and all of that. And then after four shows, the network said they didn't like the show. They wanted me to do with Judy what I'd done with Dinah, which was a very straight, nice, warm variety show. I said, but Judy isn't Dinah. I can't do that. I got fired from that show too. Because they wanted her to be Judy or Dinah, and I couldn't do that. So see.
Speaking of egos and women's egos that you dealt with, I love the story about Diana Ross when you had her with Lucy, and I can't remember who the other,
It
you
was
had her with
Lucy and
another
Ron and
icon,
Dinah Shore, and I
and
booked
Dinah Shore.
Adam Ross to do the show. You did read the book, didn't you?
I read the book, George, every
Well,
word.
you've got Lucille Ball and you got Dinah Shore. What do you put on there with her? So we go to Diana Ross and we book the three of them together, and it was wonderful. But they were the three together. Now the thing was, I said, Dinah and Lucy were really evil because here they are with this young girl, right? Young member of the Supremes, and they did terrible things to have her look, make her look at them. I said, girls, stop it now. Look. I said, look. Oh, Diana, you're so cute the way you do that. You're just so thin and so wonderful. Like, could show it to me again. Diana, stop it now. Don't. And so sure enough, when we went to tape the show, Lucy and Diana took a step back, which meant that Diana wants to see them, had to turn her head, and we could just see the side of it. I said, girls, now stop it. Just stop. We're just trying to help her. No, you are not trying to help her. And turned into a hell of a show, but it was difficult.
Was Diana aware of what they were doing?
Dinah Ross was in the Supremes, and she was doing a rock and roll thing. She had no idea what these evil women were doing to her. They were everything they did upstaged her, right? And they would sing different notes. They would, you know, but that show aired, and it became very, very successful because it was a. Again, adventure. See, if we take every disadvantage that you've experienced and see the humor in it, that's a way of life, and that's what paid for the house.
I love that. Okay, so speaking of another woman who held her ground, Cher, you worked with Cher.
Oh, Cher was a trip because I'd been very friendly with Trey, Sonny, and Cher,
When
and
they were together.
yeah, and then. Then when Sonny died, Sonny ran the act. Sonny did everything, and Cher did whatever Sonny said. So now I go to do the first Cher special, and Cher is not going to let another man tell her what to do. Sonny was controlled, and Diana would, and Cher wasn't going to do that. So she says, "Well, what do you want to do?" And I said, "Well, I want you to open up with a little pin spot, and as we move into the pin spot, quietly you sing, 'Let me entertain you.'" She said, "Wow, that's the squarest thing I ever heard." I said, "You're right, it is square, but the people are going to be curious. What are you doing now away from? Oh man, I don't want, what next?" Well, then you come down on stage and you do a kick chorus and you say, "Good evening, I'm Cher." And I'm going to say, "I'm Cher." I'm going to tell them, "I'm Cher." Yeah, well, it's just so it's kind of just to relax and then whatever. So this first show was a real adventure because she didn't like being without Sonny. And she didn't like a man telling her what to do, another man telling, because Sonny had run the act. But she's brilliant. And the woman is a great comedian and good singer. And I cherish the times I had with Cher. But it was always, she was always in the dressing room. And every time I'd get ready to tape, they say she's having her nails done. And so I called her Nails, and she called me Hammer. But she thought that my means of convincing her to do different things referred her to me as the hammer. So she said, "Okay, Hammer." And we had great time. But I mean, I did some stuff with Cher and Sonny and Elton John and Bette Midler. Wonderful show. You ought to look at that. But so she's a surprise, Cher. And today she's gone on to have a brilliant career. And she's a comedian and so forth. But
She won an Oscar.
she won an Oscar. But she's a bit of a Looney Tune, you know. I mean, she's a, but I mean, I love her. And so, we were there the other night at some award show or something. She came across all the way across the floor. She said, "Hammer!" So she called me Hammer, which kind of will give an indication of my relationship with Cher, and I guess with a lot of people, because somehow.
You don't strike me as a
Yes, to all of
task.
the
You
above.
don't str you don't strike me as a taskmaster, though. You have a lot of charm. I get the feeling that you charm people to do things, to get them to do things.
If that's one of the choices.
If that's one of the choices.
I mean, I mean, you've got to take chances. See, and the closer you get to the flame, the funnier, the chances of getting burned are increased. But the chances of getting warm are increased too. So take chances. You know, you're amazing to me. I would really like to wish I'd met you before because
Me too, George.
there's a lot of Lily in you. There's a lot of Jude. There's an outrageous woman lurking in
My.
there,
Oh
waiting for
my.
some dirty old man to pop out and surprise people. You're gonna send me some tapes, aren't you?
Well, I don't have tape. We don't tape anymore, George, but I'm gonna send you some links.
Tapes. I see. That's how come I exhibit my senility when I say,
Well, I'm right there with you, but
"Send me
yeah.
clips or send me film." Is that
I'm
all?
going to send you links. I'm going to send you links. You click them and then the magic happens.
Please, because what are you doing next?
So I told you on Mondays I do this shooting the shit with Vicky thing every Monday, and then every Wednesday I interview somebody wonderful, and you're one of the most wonderful wonderfuls I've ever interviewed. I'm thrilled to be doing this.
Send me some of these clips. I would love to see that because I think we need gorgeous lady who,
Aww.
you know, who likes who appreciates rim shots. You know what a rim shot is?
I sure do.
Okay, well, rum bam,
No,
and you are a rim shot waiting to happen.
I love that. I love that.
And so I,
All
but I
right,
would.
so wait, I'm going to ask you if I'm going to I promised Jeff I would only keep you for under an hour, but I want to ask you about a few I want to ask you
Let
about
me
Frank
hear you.
Sinatra because
You know,
you can't
Jeff.
hear me.
You know.
I promised Jeff I'd only keep you for under an hour, so I'm going to honor that. But I wanted to ask you about Frank Sinatra because you had a very unique relationship with him, and you were one of the people who eulogized him, which I just can't even imagine what that was like. But
Oh.
how did you meet Frank? You must have met Frank in Vegas, I'm
Frank,
assuming.
I met Frank at MCA. I was a new at MCA. I was wearing the only guy there in a gray gabardine suit. Everybody else was wearing black. And I was my first week there, and I was delivering something to the head of MCA. And every agent in the building started down the hall, and they all arrived at Larry Barnett's office. And here are all these guys in black suits in a black office, and in the middle of it, me in a gabardine suit. Sinatra comes in. And I had his contract. Right? He was to sign a contract. And he would sign a contract, which meant that they represented him, but he didn't pay him commission because they made so much money just by having Frank Sinatra under contract. So he came in to sign. And he said, "Is this the contract that I?" And they handed me the contract. The last guy in the room should have that contract. He said, "Yeah." He said, "Is this the contract?" "Yeah." He said, "Is it okay?" He said, "Yeah, it's fine." "Okay." And he signs the contract. I never read it, just signed a contract, gave it to me, and he said, looked at me and he said, "I have ties older than this guy." And he left the room, and everybody thought I was a made guy. They thought I was some heavy gavone because Sinatra paid all the attention to me and then handed me the contract
Wow.
and made my reputation at MCA because they thought I was somebody. And I was nobody, you know, but
Wow. How old were you?
I was 19. And so
Wow.
our relationship went from there until periodically from that moment up until he died, we would be involved in various things. And I could get him to do that. I could make him laugh. And if you could make Frank laugh, you could get by with anything, but you better be careful. And I would make him laugh. And so finally, they have the funeral planned, and his wife, you know, who I was crazy about, Barbara said, "Would I do one of the eulogies?" And I said, "Please, Barbara, I can't. No, you've got all these stars there. Please, I don't want to." Yep. So anyhow, okay. So I'm terrified of doing the eulogy. I said, "Okay, as long as I don't have to follow like Cary Grant or somebody." She said, "No." Sure enough, Cary Grant, and now. And now the bishop is introducing me. I went, "The bishop." So I didn't know what to say because I'd never even met a lot of bishops, you know? So when he said, "Here's George Slaughter," I said, "Thank you, Your Honor." Indicating I've been introduced by a policeman rather than a religious. Well, the place cracked up. Even the bishop laughed, right? And that got me off the hook at Sinatra's funeral. But I had adored Sinatra. He was a major event. And they did a show the other night, the Sin City, Vegas. If you have a chance, you got to look at Las Vegas Sin City
I
and
will.
think back for the many, many years ago, the little guy that showed up as Frank Sinatra was a major adventure. And that was the man I knew, and that was the man that I had such laughs with. And did partially destroyed my liver and kidneys and whatever. He'd say, "Okay, crazy, let's have a beverage." Well, a beverage with Frank Sinatra usually involved a fifth of tequila, you
Tequila, really?
know. But he drank Jack Daniels. I would,
So did I.
when I was going to be with him, I would take a bottle and fill it with water and then put it on the bar, and he would hit the Jack Daniels there, and I'd put my tequila, my vodka, but it was actually water. And then after about 10 minutes, he'd say, "Let me taste that." And we found out I was drinking water. It made him very angry because he, you know, and
He wanted company.
yes, and he said, "That does it, crazy." And he says, "I got it, call me crazy. That does it, crazy. I got to get younger friends." And I would stay with him. So
So,
my
all right, before I let you go, tell us about Sammy Davis Jr. You tell a beautiful,
Yeah.
beautiful story about the special that you did for
The
Sammy.
whole career is, it's in the book. The whole career is spotted with all of these little adventures, you know? Not a normal book like anybody else would write. It's a book of accidents and
It's
funny.
wonderful.
And so it was Sammy Davis was one of the most talented people in the world.
How'd you meet Sammy?
What?
How'd you meet Sammy?
Sammy was working at Larry Potter's, and I was doing a show with the at Ciro's, and it was a premiere night, and Sammy was going to be the opening act for, and so we're going to do, six, seven, 8 minutes. And Sammy came out and saw this audience, which was all celebrities at Ciro's, and he went crazy. He did 15 minutes. And that at Ciro's, you could get shot for that, And from then on, it was just like Sammy Davis. And he exploded. And he was one of the most talented people. And people ought to look at this show that was on the other night, the Las Vegas Sin City. Because Sammy hit that stage like an explosion. He hit that stage. Fastest tap dancing you've ever seen in your life. And then he went on from there. He did impressions, and then he played instruments, and then he did all of this stuff, this barrage of high energy, charming, athletic show business. And we now plan to do a show, Sammy's big special with Sammy. And when they announced the special, they found out that Sammy had throat cancer. And was that so? They said that the doctor said Sammy couldn't do the show. I said, wait, you don't understand. I sold the show. Sammy has to do the show. So I went to talk to him and said, Sam, look, we've been friends a long time. Don't send me out there to make some kind of an announcement because I sold the show and you're going to have to do the show. I said, don't cross me up now. And so he agreed to do the show. And He came out, it's tough to remember, but the end of the show, he comes out to take a bow, and with Greg Hines is there, and Sammy came out to take a bow, and we had put his, I told Greg, I said, when you finish your routine, go over, and I put Sammy's shoes under his chair, so give him the shoes. Greg says, I can't do that. I said, you do that or I'll slap the color off you. You give him the shoes. He said, George, he said he didn't want to. I said, I'm telling you, give him. So anyhow, Greg Hines went out, and when you see the show, you see him do this great dance routine. And I'm standing over here. I'm telling you. So he goes over and he gives Sammy the shoes. The place exploded. Everybody, the place went nuts when they saw Greg handing Sammy these red shoes. And Sammy got up with Greg, and Greg said, you want to do a little shine on your shoes, shine on your shoes. And Sammy said, in a voice you could barely hear, make it easy on yourself. Mm-hmm. And you realize this little man who was dying was going to dance, and he did. It blows you away. You see Sammy, this little old frail man who was dying of throat cancer, come up on stage, and he danced, and it was.
Is this, we can find this on YouTube? We can find this show?
It's a Sammy Davis special. Wow. And everybody showed up. The whole world showed up. But the moment with Greg Hines, and Frank showed up, and Dean and everybody, but the moment with Greg Hines was something special. See, my whole career, which is in that book, is spotted or soiled with accidents. And Sammy Davis, accident. Frank Sinatra, accident. Robin Williams, accident. All of those things were things that to anybody, any sane person, would have been a reason to quit or to get out of the way or to stop, But if you look at an accident as an opportunity and savor it, then you can have a good life and have a lot of fun. Like this, you were meeting you as an accident. I don't know how this happened.
I don't know how it happened either, but you are no accident, George. You are.
I would like for us to, first of all, I really, really, really want to see the show because I think you're wonderful, and you remind me of the girls that we put on the left who would laugh and play and enjoy doing the joke, being the joke, whatever. And I want to see your tape because I think you're wonderful. I really do.
Thank you so much.
I still had my health, I would adopt you or hit on you or something, But where are you, do you know?
Where am I? I'm in Encino.
Jesus Christ.
Why, is that a bad place to be?
Yeah, I would like to get you out of Encino. You're much more in the hills. And Encino is so much in the valley,
No, but I'm up in the hills. I'm beautiful.
Beautiful. All right.
No, I have a beautiful home overlooking the whole thing there.
I don't want you down on the side streets.
No, I'm up in the hills. Beautiful.
Hello.
Oh, yeah.
You belong up in the hills.
I'm up in the hills. I'm very lucky.
Are you married?
I have a beau. You might know who he is. His name is Snuffy Walden. He's a TV composer, and
Yes,
he won an Emmy Award
well
for The
known,
West
well known,
Wing.
very
Yes,
successful.
he did about 100 television shows, and
Well, that's
yes.
good. I mean, very successful, and
Yeah.
some of the guys are pulling around and everything good.
He's my roommate. We live here.
Perfect, perfect. And how's it going? All right, little okay. I mean, I'm just curious. No, I'm just curious because you have a wonderful, horny laugh, and it sounds.
George, George,
No,
George.
seriously, I mean, I want to know, are you fooling
Yeah,
around
we're doing pretty good there, George.
with me? Right, then that's good. That completes my questionnaire.
Listen, I just you're even better than I could have imagined. This has been more fun than
I
I
haven't heard that since my honeymoon.
I
Was a lie then.
you are more fun than I could have anticipated, and I'm so
I
very
heard that on my
grateful.
honeymoon too.
You? And I'm so very grateful. Did you hear that too?
That's
Yeah.
that. Yeah. Let's hold on to that. That's 3 for 3.
Three for three. Thank you
Really
so
enjoyed.
much for doing this, George.
Really, again, another honeymoon. Really enjoyed this, and I want to do it again. And I want you to send me the show, and I want to see that because I think we ought to do something. I mean, let's.
Let's do it, George. I'm in.
I think so.
I'm down for any accident you want to make.
Hello, that sounds good to me. Again, my honeymoon. Anyway, the wonderful, wonderful way to spend the afternoon. I loved it. I loved it. I hope it's not too long. You got to
It's
be.
perfect. It's a
Anyhow,
per it's
but
perfect.
let's get together. Do it again because I really would
I
love
love it.
to. How tall are you?
5'5".
Perfect.
Little short, but all right.
That's all right. That's all right. No, this is great fun. Thank you.
Thank you, George. I will be in touch. Thank you so much.
Please, let's do it. Let's do it
Okay.
together. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Bye-bye.
All right.